Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
I've always really enjoyed Ryan Long's comedy. I think it's very, very funny. But increasingly, it is taking on the character of prophecy. And you've seen this before with his sketches about, I don't know, the vaccines or about COVID or about wokeism or whatever. But he did one that was really on the money. Ryan did a masterclass on a neocon defense contracting war criminal nation building type of individual. And I don't know, like 5 minutes later, masterclass announces that it is in fact hosting a class with Hillary Clinton. This, I don't know how, unless he has a crystal ball, he could have known this. Ryan, thank you for coming on.
Hey, yeah, what'd she say? She's in the trailer, she was doing the speech that like would have been. Isn't that crazy? That's like a dude, yeah, you get married and then like the divorce goes and you go, you give a class on marriage and you go, you know, this is the speech I almost gave at my wedding before we broke up.
This would have been my 50th anniversary speech, that the toast at our party.
Yeah, we broke up after 2 years, fairly traumatically, actually. But had we made it to 50 years, this is the kind of stuff I would have been saying.
You know, this brings up, actually, one of my favorite sketches that you did recently that it was hilarious, but it got to a really important philosophical and anthropological point that men do not appreciate. It was on the phrase, one of my least favorite phrases in the English language, happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, there's a base, and the gist was the guy that just consistently says happy wife, happy life. And by the end of it, you're just like 100% a simp. Because obviously, yeah, I mean, there's obviously a point underneath where any proper working relationship with like a person or, you know, a wife or whatever, there you're going to have to argue to some degree. But I find that what people do, dudes, they go, they'll like bottle it all in and just take it, and then just blow up and they go, I'm putting my foot down. And then you got to make some big stink about nothing when really it was 100 issues at the same time, where it's like, if you just, no, just be kind of cool all the time. Be like, hey, what's going on here? You know, this, you have like a fight about something, but you let it go. And then it's like the girl that says, hey, I don't want you going out with your friends on Tuesday. And you go, all right, whatever. And then, you know, she's like, no, Thursday. And then by the end of it, you're like, she goes, I need you to come because my mom's getting married again. And I need you to come to the wedding. And you go, I am going out. And that you end up making a stink about something ridiculous. It's because I have my wing night and I will change for nothing. You pushed me to the edge.
This is it. If you, I am putting my knuckles on the floor and dragging, because you don't need to be a knuckle dragger. Just to your point, the phrase is not even true. If happy wife, happy life means appease your wife in all of her unreasonable and disordered demands and desires, that will not make your life happy. It won't make her life happy either. It's just, The guys who tell me happy wife, happy life, they're generally not the happiest guys. This is even why.
Well, they have awesome wives. Yeah. Like, or it's a dude that his wife kind of rules and he's, you know, happy wife, happy life. You're like, well, yeah, easy to you say. You're to say, like, she's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, you don't have that battle axe, you know, that I've got hanging around. This is why I'm skeptical of man caves. Even look, some man caves, they're very beautiful. I like, you know, some of my friends have incredible man caves, so I like that. But the idea of the man cave is that you don't have any place in your house. You have to go to a subterranean dungeon so that you can watch football and eat wings or whatever, because your wife will just banish you if you try to. What happened to a man's home as his castle?
You know what? It's always like a matching thing, even with employees, because I have like some buddies that are pushover guys, you know, whatever, certain people, it's like, it's not always the bad characteristic. A lot of times it's why people like them, because they're, you know, kind of down for whatever. Right. But in this, in like those kind of scenarios, and people are always like, well, you need to put your foot down. Like, don't take shit from her. It's like, the truth is, if you're the type of guy that's always, you know, agreeable like that, what you really need is to find like a nice person that doesn't take advantage of people like that. You know what I mean? I see some of these like crazy girls. I'm like, I think I could handle that, because I'm down. If I'm like the type of guy that's like, I'm down to argue. If you want to argue, let's argue. But if you're not, if you're the type of guy that's not, you need to find a person that's like that's not going to take advantage of you nonstop.
That's right. Rather than totally change your own personality, you just need to not marry a predator. Yeah, that this is. Well, you know, there's this weird thing. Right? I was just talking to my friend Michael Anton, who's a great political philosopher and writer over at Claremont. And he pointed out that we're living in kind of upside down world right now, in this very unprecedented time where everything that is supposedly beautiful is actually ugly. And you look at it on the billboards and even lingerie models now. You look at a billboard in Times Square and it's like the ugliest, fattest, most grotesquely naked person.
Well, they kind of have no chill in this country, right? It went straight from, there's no moderation. It went from every model looks like a twig and she's puking out breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, you know what I mean? I got to go throw up because I ate a grape, to like, I'm modeling the biggest piece of fabric in the history of the world. There's no in between, no balance.
I guess we're just very extreme. Because I was trying to think, you know, it hit me with the marriages, because we went from this world in which a man's home is his castle and, you know, man is the ruler of the roost, to if a man ever expresses an opinion in his home, that he's basically a psychopath patriarch and needs to be booted to the street. And same thing
Not
with comedy.
Not in my home.
Yeah. In comedy now, we're told that, you know, jokes are not funny, but nanette. And that woman, the least funny woman of all time, she's the funniest woman ever. And that tragedy actually is the new comedy. And then it just got me thinking about the billboards and like even the buildings, you know, hideous, brutalist buildings are beautiful buildings. And all the beautiful classical architecture in D.C. basically has to be knocked down.
It's like I sort of live like a weird pirate life. And a lot of it comes to like normalizing outliers, where it's like, you know, that's actually the good thing. But it doesn't really help, because even if you think of Nanette, like, yeah, I guess they like pushed it, but it also that created like such a backlash, what it always does. Right. Like, you know, that show, okay, there's this show Love Island. Yeah. It's like girl show. Right. And it's like a bunch of hot people. Right. And so they've always on these shows that are essentially a bunch of hot people, and they pick the people, they've been trying to introduce like, you know, non-traditionally attractive people. And like pretty decent looking for normal. But so they'll have like supermodel, 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 Walmart customer, supermodel. Right. And then so the dudes don't want to get in trouble. So you see the guys, they kind of go up and they go, you know, everyone was good. I felt that I had a bit more of attraction with the five supermodels. Got to be honest. So you're like, who is this helping? And then every year a girl like kills herself because they get bullied on the internet. And the show kind of is like, bullying's bad. But also, it's like if you said a 12-year-old was like pretty good at basketball, right? And then you put them in the NBA, and then every day you're like, he's the best player in the NBA. Everyone would be like, yo, I hate this 12. You know what I mean? Yeah. All of a sudden, everyone's like talking trash on the 12-year-old. And then the kind of idea is like, why are you guys being mean? It's like, no, because they're mad that this thing's getting like pushed in their face. So I don't know, if you try to just like upset like reality too much, I think it generally kind of backlashes. Even when you're talking about the you can't say jokes and stuff, like the truth is like, there's probably more of a want for people to hear like wild stuff when you do comedy clubs because of that, you know, because people feel like maybe you can't say it at jobs or whatever. Whereas probably in the 90s or whatever, when it was like most accepted, there was almost like a genre of like the wild comedy, like we're saying outrageous stuff. It was almost gross. Like it's kind of like when you do like an edgy show and they go, this is the like edgy, we're saying everything. And then you like your instinct there is like, I don't want to say it now. Right. That's gross.
No, well, that was what Norm Macdonald did at the Bob Saget roast, right? Everyone was just saying all these filthy, disgusting anatomical things. And Norm gets up and does a joke about how Saget's head looked like cauliflower. And he was doing all these like Dean Martin roast jokes, and it totally subverted things. So actually
that's like the perfect reference. It really is that. And that's the like mechanism, because he's, you know, he's saying, the whole thing is it's the funniness stems from in that genre, like the opposite of what expected. And once it's like really expected, it just feels disgusting to do.
So, you know, I was joking at the top about how you're Nostradamus and you keep kind of calling these things.
I have had a few.
Well, but I think the reason for this is a priest friend of mine from New York pointed out that prophets are not people who have a crystal ball and they predict the future. Prophets are just observing the world as it is, while other people are imagining a world that no longer is. And so they're just observing reality, and then this seems like they're predicting the future because they're telling the truth in a world full of lies. So what does that mean for us? The fact that you seem to be predicting all of these things, Nostradamus, please tell me, what do we have to look forward to?
Well, I think there is something to be said about, or you could maybe make it less important where you just say, hey, things are like moving in a direction. And then like the satire I do is like, I just do an extreme version of it. And then as long as we stay on that path, we'll get there. You know what I mean? But in terms of like predicting, it's always like predicting a stock market, right? Like on a trend, is this the top or is this, you know, keep going? I would say, in my opinion, culturally, I remember to some degree, I was like switching on some of the things I was talking about in like around 2016. And then it felt like we went back a few years. And I would say right now, culturally, we're sort of like we were here. Or I'm putting my hand where you can see it. And then if there was a peak, it sort of went up and then back. So I feel like we're back, you know, like 20% from the top right now. Like without Trump, it feels a little calmer. People aren't as, you know, fired up in general. So it depends on what happens next, right? Like, does this go back down or does things get like fired up the way it is before? Like, I was loving the idea of just, you know, at peak, like how much you could just every family gathering, people are fighting. And I was loving the idea of just going up to a family gathering and you, whatever people think, just show up and go, hey, who do you guys think's the bigger hero, George Floyd or Kyle Rittenhouse? Anyway, got to go to the bathroom and just... Just trying to get people fired.
There's this big chasm between what we're being told is real on this, you know, George Floyd is the greatest hero or whatever. You know, there's this great chasm between what we're being told by the whole establishment and the reality of it. And you see this reflected in poll numbers. You see, you know, Biden's at 38% and he's basically the most popular guy in his administration. Kamala Harris is at 27%, which is lower than Dick Cheney was after the Iraq war and after shooting a guy in the face. So this is historically low kind of stuff. And yet we're being told it's the most popular thing ever. It's the most wonderful thing. Pete Buttigieg, who's now being hailed as the next great presidential candidate, he was asked, hey, what are people supposed to do about gas prices? And he basically said, go buy a Tesla with a straight face. And so what's the reaction when we're living in this kind of clown world from the propaganda of the ruling class? And yet we still can look around and we still have eyes to see that that's not what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like every president is just like the like team that likes him puts out press releases about how much he's killing it. And then because I remember that with, you could say the same thing with Trump where, you know what I mean? The left would be like, look here, we did a poll and actually it's -5% people like him. And then people would be like, and then you go and it's like everyone from, you know, all these states loves him. But Biden doesn't have, that's one thing that's like interesting with people that are like commentary that like hate Biden. You kind of, it's not the same as Trump because they're kind of like, he's the worst or whatever. But I feel like he doesn't have people defending that. So it's not so cut and dry. Like there's not even really people that are really left wing. They're just like, I'm just like a Biden head. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like does that exist? I think even people that like were super liberal are kind of like, you know, maybe like some 60-year-old kind of Upper West Side types. But I think in general, there's no 25-year-old that's all in on Biden, no matter what your kind of political.
No, we're in the I don't even know what the version of the MAGA hat for Biden would be. You know,
it's like a nightcap.
just these young people wearing blue nightcaps to express their support of Biden. You don't see it. And actually in the polling, this is left-wing polls now, of Democrats, only about 37% even want him to be the nominee going forward. So you don't know who's going to come up. So then I have to ask your expert opinion.
So you kind of just before, so I find whenever it gets like that, then you notice all the infighting between the sides. Like, I feel like all the left-wing people are fighting with each other and all the right-wing people are fighting with each other a little bit now. Mm. Haven't you noticed that
totally.
Like more in the last 4 months? That's like kind of always what happens, right? It was like so clear who was, you know, on which side or whatever. And then once it became wishy-washy, everyone kind of looks at, it's like the, imagine like being in a church and then like no one's paying attention to you anymore. And then you're kind of like, she's having sex without marriage. Like all these people start arguing with each other. And then the left-wing people are kind of like, this guy doesn't even, he's not even a communist enough.
Yeah, this guy, man, he's not even wearing the hammer and sickle. This is no good. Well, So what I need to know from you in your expert opinion in comedy is it seems to me Donald Trump was a very funny president. I think he was probably the funniest president.
Dude, have you seen his like stuff, the press releases? It's not the one that he released the other day. Dude, they're so funny. He came out with one. It was just like, just want to say the people at The View are a bunch of slobs. It's like, he goes, something, it was like the McCain's daughter. And he goes, you know, her dad like made me do the world's longest funeral of all time. And it was like, it was great. And the fact that he's like writing it down and putting it out in a press release is like even funnier.
The fact, I remember there was one time he was at a state dinner. He was having dinner with the Queen, and he sent out a tweet back in those days when he was still on Twitter. He sent out a tweet at what would have been about 1:30 in the morning his time after this beautiful dinner with the royal family, in which he called Bette Midler a washed up psycho.
He's out of control.
So I think, okay, I think Trump is probably the funniest, best comedic chops president we've ever had.
No, Obama was funny.
You think Obama was funny?
Obama was really funny. Yeah, it was kind of like, They both were kind of, you know, could have been TV presenters, you know, or I guess Trump was. But like, no, Obama was comedically like very high level. That's like that's why, you know, Obama had everyone who was, they liked him the way that, you know, people that like Trump, because he was like a guy everyone kind of like wanted to be, like he was cool and he was funny.
He did have that line about the Predator drones. I thought that was pretty funny. He did that. I do remember he did that bit for one of the dinners where he acted as Daniel Day-Lewis acting as Barack Obama. That was pretty funny too. But so then looking forward, who is the funniest presidential candidate that we could look at for 2024?
I know that you said, I don't really know them that well, but I remember I met Andrew Yang at The Stand, and he's kind of, I always thought it's funny that his whole thing is like, you know, wearing the math pin and like kind of nerdy. And then when I saw him, he was all like cool. He's all like, yeah, what's up, man? Like he's like a New York cool kid.
Really?
I didn't realize that he was like different in real life. But the Buttigieg, I just remember, it is kind of what you said, where they were always, it seemed like every blog was like 10 reasons why he's so sick. And they're like, he has a slingshot, he skateboards. Like they're always kind of pushing. They like, he's actually pretty sick. Like that was kind of the vibe of the push on Buttigieg. So 2024, I guess there's kind of a couple years away. It seems like if the Democrats want to win, they need like someone that's very charismatic and kind of cool. I don't know. The Republicans, I don't know. Is Trump running? You probably have a better pulse
on
that.
I don't know. I mean, I think there are good candidates on the right. I mean, DeSantis is running pretty hard, I think, at this point. At the governor level, there's no one can touch him. He's by far the best setup for this. I think at the Senate level, no one can touch Ted Cruz. I don't just say it because we're buddies, but he, you know, he's just got the infrastructure. He's done it before. He's kind of leading in the Senate. But sort of
The Rock?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. You get these kind of, you know, random candidates who'd be thrown in, but then none of it really matters, in my view, because if Trump runs, that's it, right? He just totally clears the field. No one wants to become the next
Little
Marco.
He's the right-wing guy.
I think.
Right.
Yeah, who wants to be in that?
Yeah,
in
and
those
if you
crossroads?
Do, it's just true. If you're like a Republican and you want to run and Trump's running, you're like, ugh, I got to go have him call my wife fat now.
Here, we're talking about how I eat pizza. I mean, Trump went on this whole thing about how disgusting Kasich looks when he eats a slice of pizza. No one wants to be in that.
Yeah, I think everyone might be like, I guess there's a lot of people that are hardcore fans, but I think a lot of people, even they were like Trump guys, kind of don't like him as much because of like the vaccine stuff, right?
Well, that is, it is a weird spot that he's in because a lot of conservative, I mean, I'm obviously extremely skeptical of all the vaccines and having to take the 17th Fauci ouchie, you know, just to get, because it's so
I'm
very
on my
effective.
45th.
Oh, well, so you've almost got immunity.
Yeah,
you get just
close.
A few more and then you're pretty close.
My buddy, I'll quote my buddy Danny Polishuk's thing, but because they're giving everyone free stuff, and he goes, "New York's like not the city to be giving people free free stuff for vaccines." And it was like, "We're giving out Yankees tickets now." And Danny said, "I guess I'm going to find out what happens when you get 40 doses of this vaccine."
Did you see in the Netherlands, there's a brothel that's giving a free 30-minute session? Yes, no, there's a, yeah, you might be booking your tickets right now to Holland, but this brothel was giving away a free 30-minute sex session if you took the shot, which means that there are people now who are more Pfizer than man at this point, I think.
Yeah, I know. Dude, that stuff's so funny. But yeah, I think that, I don't know. I, to be honest, I think that it would be probably even more tumultuous than before if he goes. So I don't know. We'll see. But I think right now it's like a little calmer. I think it's more likely that Trump has a podcast and he's selling like Patriot pills for,
I would tune in.
The top tier subscribers to like the Truth Social. And he's selling like Freedom Water and stuff like that. And he's just making more like Truth Social. Trump, I think he quadrupled his net worth overnight with just like people pumping that stock. So I don't know why.
Just sending out one press because he can't even put it on Twitter. Well, I guess this raises the question about that then though. If the guy is not allowed on any social media, if the SEC is looking into him and all the kind of bureaucratic arms are trying to shut this guy up, I would subscribe to his podcast, but are they going to let him? Are they going to let him do anything?
Who knows? I have a, you know what a funny thing was? This was, so we're at this like, there's this thing in New York and one of our buddies, it was like a fancy like party kind of thing. It was like a bunch of rich people, right? I'm not really like, I don't know these people, but I knew like one guy. And then one of Trump's like daughters was there. And then I guess because of that, the Secret Service has to like travel with you. So we're at like a party and we had to go to get like White Claws from like a bodega and the Secret Service had to like follow us. I was like, this is so, I guess they follow them forever. So we're at a bodega and there's like Secret Service guys outside of the bodega making sure that we're safe when we're getting White Claws. I was like,
That is so embarrassing because as a fellow just absolute lover of White Claws, I consider myself a White Claw aficionado. Like if you're standing next to G.I. Joe, you know, and you go to the bodega to order your raspberry flavored hard seltzer, that can't make you feel very masculine.
No, isn't that crazy?
I didn't realize that they all get it forever. And could you imagine if he does run again, could you imagine the riots? Can you imagine just if you think
No, people would have to like dust off their Molotov cocktails. Like people that, you know, left that life and just have like went back to their normal job and then have to go back to the closet and be like, all right, we're rioting again. Dust off my Twitter fingers and getting into it. So I don't know. As far as like, it feels like that chapter's closed up a bit. And you're so old. Like all these presidents are so old now. It's like, I think it's time to potentially do something else, I think.
Well, it is hard if you're running against a guy for being 80, Joe Biden, and then
you're look at, and he's a bit younger. He's like, yeah, look at this guy. He's so old. He's old. I look at, I'm only 79 as opposed to this old geezer.
Although Trump did have that line.
Vote for the young candidate.
When they asked him about Biden's age, he did say, they said, you know, he said, I'm not going to attack Biden for his age, you know, but all I know is I'm a young man. I'm a young, vibrant man. And certainly
that's the best.
There's obviously not a ton of youth or vibrancy out in most of the political landscape. But so you're in New York. You mentioned you're
he
still
believed it too, for sure. Like if Trump was like, he's like writing this speech and he's like, dude, I'm like young as hell. And everyone's like, I don't know about that. He's like, what? You don't think I'm young?
He's got dragon energy, him and Kanye. It's pumping through his veins. Now you're in New York. You have, you've stayed there. You've survived the smash and grabs and the peaceful arson and the de Blasio administration.
I live in the East Village and it's like, it really has become like pretty wild. I used to film these videos on the street and at first it was like mostly normal people. But by the end, it was like the people that kind of just live there, like took over the park. And this is, I said this on stage, but this is the argument that I heard a guy and a girl have. A guy and a girl were arguing. The girl goes to the guy and she goes, "Hey, I showed you the t's. Now give me the McFlurry." And so these are the kind of deals that are taking place like outside of my house. Wow. And by, this is actually true. We were just talking about this. But this might be the Canadian in me.
Yeah.
But there's a guy, and I live in like, not, by the way, not a, you know, some like dump, right? It's like Manhattan.
you're in a beautiful part of Manhattan. Very yeah, high real estate.
Not like wildly expensive, but yeah. It's, you know, how New York is, right? And then outside my house, all these people like smoke crack. And then I noticed after doing this like three or four times that I'm very, when I walk by being like, "Hey, sorry guys, like really sorry, I need to get by." And now I'm just like, why am I apologizing to these people? They're smoking crack in my doorway.
But they're clearly pretty evil people, because I was just thinking about the guy who bribed the woman to flash him with the McFlurry. Everyone who goes to McDonald's knows the McFlurry machine is always broken. So if you're offering a woman, that's dark, man. That's very deceitful.
That's his trick. He finds out when the McFlurry machine's broken and makes all these McFlurry deals and he comes back.
So
you're a junior cheeseburger.
Sorry, here's a fillet of fish. I don't have anything. So you,
that's hilarious.
You move from Canada. You make it here to America. But now I got to ask, most of my friends, I'm a New Yorker, born and raised. Most of my friends from New York.
And you're in Nashville now?
I'm in Nashville. I left New York. I left LA. Now I'm living in the heart of the country. A lot of other people are. Are you, now that you're an American, are you gonna flee New York as well? Or are you going to stick it out?
No, New York's still the best place in the world for comedy. I know a lot of, every once in a while, unfortunately, like everyone will always be like, actually, there's a comedy scene in, you know, Memphis. They like just pick a place, right? But yeah. No, the difference is insane. Like I do, you know, the Stand and the Comedy Cellar and Brooklyn Comedy Club. And like, these are, you know, the best comedians in the world. And yeah. Austin has a little pocket, you know, of people, and every scene has a little pocket, but unfortunately it's like, there's nowhere where you could do 5-6 sets a night and really be, you know, there with the best of the best. So it's just like the same reason if you, you know, now it does shift. Like if you want to be in tech, like I think it used to be San Francisco. Now you can move to Austin and there's always people moving and shaking, but New York, as far as like art goes, as far as comedy goes, it's pretty back to normal. It's still all of the people that during COVID were like, I'm the hell out of here. I'm going to go, you know, this comedy scene, I'll be in Miami comedy scene. They're all slowly coming back one by one and being like, yeah, I mean, that's not really the same thing. So it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, it would be obviously better to live somewhere where you have a big, you know, house and it's warm and, but it's unfortunate. I even went to LA like recently and I'm just like, man, New York is better comedy. It's just what the situation is. So I moved here specifically for that reason. So I don't think that I would leave for the next little bit unless my life changed drastically and I gave up on, you know, trying to be the best of the best. But I think if you're in this zone and you're in your years where you go, I want to try to be the best comedian in the world or one of the best comedians in the world, I think it's hard to properly do that somewhere else.
You're probably right about that. So how is the reception? Obviously, you're super popular. You've got about a bazillion views on YouTube. But how is your reception in Brooklyn or in Manhattan? You know, I'm not saying you're some like buttoned up tweed wearing bow tie conservative, but you obviously contradict a lot of the liberal orthodoxies that are.
I think it as like masculine and feminine. Like, but most people are like pretty receptive. Like, there's obviously people at every show, and this is I know that over the last like little while, it was probably liberals that were the wild, but like, you know, there's, I would say it's depending on where I am. It's like there conservatives can be just as bad. It's just different topics. Right. Mm. But like, and then there's people there's always like a difference between like, you were trying to get mad and, you know,
right.
You were trying to get mad and then you actually were mad. Cause you know, conservatives have their topics like, you know, pedophile jokes, like troop stuff. Like obviously some of that stuff can be very testy sometimes it'll be like, I've been where it's my fault too, where you go do a show and, you know, maybe you're too wild. You're talking about, you know, even it could just be something similar as like sex stuff. And there's like a old bunch, like way too many old people in the crowd and they didn't like it. And you could come up with a way and be like, yo, they're just afraid of real con. Or you could be like, you know what? I went into that situation. I did it wrong.
I didn't tailor it to right.
But that's very, and not that you have to tailor it always, but like that's different than a bunch of old people saying like, hey, there's this comedy show where people are talking about sex. Let's go down there and like be mad.
Right.
So I think that, so it depends on where it is. But most comedy clubs, I think people are fairly receptive to anything that's funny. Definitely, I switch a little what I'm doing based on red states and blue states because I'm more, my general like tone is to be against what I'm talking to.
Right.
Kind of like
recipe for success. Just whatever the audience is, just find a way to piss them off. That's the right.
It really is. But I even think of it as like, think about with your friends. Like, imagine you were hanging out with your friend and you're all making fun of him, but he's there. And then, or like even your girlfriend or whatever, and then they leave and you're all making fun of him. And then some other people that don't know him that well are kind of making fun of him. You're like, well, you don't get to really do that. You're not his friend. You have to be pretty close to make fun of them when they're left, right? So I kind of think of that the same comedy principle where it's like, let's say I was doing like a really hard thing on LGBTQ or whatever. I wouldn't want to do that in front of a room of people that were, you know, actually thought gay people shouldn't get married.
Had the electrodes in their hands. It was all just Mike Pence's electrodes, right? Yeah.
Straight up like gay therapy stuff. Yeah. But yeah, it also felt like it feels funner to even like, you know, let's say you were trashing Trump, like that feels way funner to do at places where they like him than if you go to somewhere where they hate him. Like if they hate him, it feels like gross if, you know, you're just pandering at that point. So a lot of times my general tone is to kind of make fun of. But don't, I even find that with like, you know, like even like TV shows or friend groups or like music genres. Like let's say everyone's into punk, right? When everyone's into punk music and you get together, you don't generally talk about what's wrong with jazz. You kind of talk about what's wrong with your thing, right? So I think that a lot of the stuff that I've been making fun of, even, you know, when people were getting wild in the Trump years, was like, I know these people and I grew up with them. And it's a bit me, to be honest. So I think there's kind of, I try to have some of that stuff in the comedy or else it comes across as, you know, more propaganda
and
than
preachy and right. That's a great distinction, a profound prophetic as usual distinction. Ryan, I've already taken up too much of your time as I often do. I look forward to the next great prophecy that you have. I'm sure there will be many more. Where can people find you if they haven't found you already?
So I do a podcast every Friday called The Boys Cast with Ryan Long. And there's patreon.com/theboyscast. And then also I do a video every Monday at youtube.com/RyanLongComedy. And I'm releasing a stand-up special in January. Oh, also I saw that right before I started, I saw you like this tweet, but did you see the Jordan Peterson in Nashville?
He's going to become a woohoo girl on the back of one of those buses. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Michaela too. She's my friend, but it's so funny to me. Like, Jordan Peterson, like every day he was posting like, oh, look at this beer. Like, oh, bar is this much. He's like one step. He's just cruising around Nashville like he's on a bachelorette party. Like he's one step away from having like Mardi Gras beads on. I was like, dude, how funny it would be. You're just like at a bar in Nashville getting like just drinking and stuff. And you look over like Jordan Peterson's on the dance floor. That's so funny.
It's one of the premier public. This is, I'm not making a joke. This is just an actual description of what happened. One of the premier public intellectuals in the world was at Kid Rock's big ass honky tonk and rock and roll steakhouse. That's great. So I hope I run into
Jordan.
All right. Go get, first of all, listen to The Boys Cast. It's awesome. It's really great. Go watch all of Ryan's sketches. I look forward to the comedy special. And Ryan, I will see you soon.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Peace.